Thank you. And just check that the audio is connected. I'll start with the roll call, Jonathan.
Yes, please.
Jeff Newman. Jeff Newman. Ching Chow.
Present.
Jonathan Robinson.
Present.
Mason Cole. Sorry, could we just have somebody to mute their line? Thank you. Volker Greiman.
Present, then.
Thomas Rickert. Thomas is on mute. Dai Jamil.
I'm here.
John Berard.
I'm here.
Brian Winterfeld is not yet on the line. Peter Rintforth.
I'm here.
Osvaldo Nova.
Present.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben.
Present.
Wendy Salsa. Not yet on the call. David Cake. Not yet on the call. Magali Pazello. Not yet on the call. Joy Lidicott.
Present.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter.
Yeah, I'm here.
And Maria Farrell is absent, and we have as temporary alternate for Maria Farrell today, Norbert Klein on the line with us. Yoav Karen has just joined.
I'm here. This is Jeff
yes?
Newman. I missed the call for my name. Sorry, I'm here.
Thanks so much. Lanre Ajayi?
Present.
Jennifer Wolf?
Present.
Alan Greenberg?
Present.
And Hanjuan Lee has sent his apologies. He probably will not be able to join the call. And Brian Winterfeld has just joined the call. For staff, we have David Olive, Margie Milam, Marike Koenix, Barry Cobb, Julie Headland, Alex Kulik from our technical staff, and Wendy Salsasi has just joined the call, and myself, Glenda Saint-Jury. Have I left off anyone? So it is over to you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Glenn, and hello and welcome, everyone, to this last call, council meeting of 2012. If I could just make sure, we do seem to have a nice, clean, clear line, so just to remind everyone to keep their phones on mute when and if they are not making a contribution. So the second item on the agenda, the standard second item, is a statement of interest update, and in fact we've modified the sub-bullet to that slightly to call for general updates, but also in case there are specific updates related to any agenda items that councillors may wish to provide. So if I could call for any updates to statements of interest since the last call. Right, hearing none, we'll move
Jonathan,
on.
Jonathan, excuse me, this is Glenn. We have just been joined by our guest speaker for today, Jean-François Barry.
Welcome, Jean-François. We'll be coming to you, no doubt, later in the agenda, but it's great to have you on the call and appreciate you taking the time to attend our meeting and contribute to the specific and important item later on in the agenda.
Thank you.
So the next item we have is note that the minutes have been approved, if 29th of November, and to move on to the pending projects list. There are a number of updates to the projects list since we last met. I suggest we pick up with a couple of different individuals on these. The first one to get a note on is from Wolf Ulrich on the SCI. Wolf Ulrich, you're on the call, I know. If you wouldn't mind just giving us a couple of words to update on that area.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. It's Wolf speaking. with regarding to the SCI activities. SCI is the Standing Committee on Improvements Implementation, and that is the committee which I have to say I was chairing until last week, because we had elections for the chair and the vice chair on the SCI after almost 2 years of existence of the Standing Committee. And so we elected Ron Andolf as new chair of the Standing Committee. He is with the business constituency. And Avri Doria, she used to be the vice chair, and she is going to continue being vice chair on the SCI as well. So that's one thing from the organizational point of view to mention. And the other thing is related to the item, I think it was item number 6 or so on this agenda, regarding the motion on suspension of a PDP. You may remember the council mandated the SCI to think about, because there was nothing in the manual for the PDP, not yet, regarding a potential suspension of PDPs. There was just made a mention, and organizational things matters mentioned around termination of PDP, but there may happen also situations where a PDP is going to need to be needed to suspend it. So making the story short, so we had already a solution, let me say, on that, and we also put that on, it was put on public comment, and there was also just agreement on that. But at the end, when we resumed at the SEI meeting, with that regard, there came up another question regarding which had the effect at the end that there is still discussion needed on the SEI with regard of to address, for example, concerns from which may come from the board, in case that the board is expecting specific GNSO action on if the for a PDP which may be suspended by the GNSO, and that created some more discussion on the SCI, and at the end, so we decided, I also together with Ron and us as well, that we have to have some more discussion on that, and therefore I would like to just to mention that right now, that the item, I'm not aware whether it's still on the agenda right now, but if it's on the agenda right now, item number 6, the motion, we would like to withdraw that and postpone it, let me say, to another meeting after the SCI has ended its discussion and comes back with a final recommendation on that. So that's so far to the SCI and to this pending project. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Wolf. That's a good point, and we did discuss that in our preparatory meeting, that it was likely that motion, in fact, I think it had even been decided at that point, should and would be withdrawn. So I appreciate you confirming that now. We'll reconfirm that when we get to that item in the agenda. There are a few other items on this pending project list that I think it's worth highlighting. Of course, the SCI is doing some very good work, and it's something which we may well come back to in a couple of points during the course of this agenda, that there may be further areas that we want to highlight for the SCI. It's a very valuable role in reviewing what the procedures that we do have in place and the opportunities to update and improve them on a continuous basis. Thomas, I haven't prepared you, and I don't know if you want to say anything, but I'm conscious that there is regular work going on in the background to kick off this so-called expedited PDP on the Red Cross. It's actually INGO, NGO names. I don't know if there's anything you'd like to say at this point, or if we should wait to schedule a formal update at some point. I'll just give you the opportunity to say anything if you would like to.
Jonathan, thank you. I would like to take the opportunity just to speak on this for a maximum of 2 minutes, and that is that the group is meeting in weekly intervals for 2-hour conference calls. And what we have done in order to manage this very controversially discussed project is that we have worked on a matrix how to approach the subject, and we've sliced the work in various subgroups. So we have one group that is dealing with qualification criteria, trying to come up with criteria according to which organizations can be vetted whether or not they would qualify for the special protections that we discussed. Then we have another team working on eligibility checks, and that means that if an organization thinks that it fulfills the qualification criteria, that somebody needs to check whether this is actually true. Then we have a third group dealing with protections, and that group looks at existing and future RPMs and to what extent, if at all, they can help address the issue. A further group is dealing with admission, as we called it, and that means it defines how organizations that are eligible can actually access a potential protection program. And last but not least, we have one further group that deals with the nature of the problem, and that discusses what is actually the reason for granting special protections. Now, that's it in a nutshell. The group is going to work in these various subgroups on the matrix to have an interim report ready by our next council meeting. So I'm going to report on the progress we made formally then, but I'd like to invite all councillors to look at this, join the working group or join one or multiple subgroups. Remember, this PDP has been called a case study by both the GAC as well as the board, and I think the more people contribute and provide input, the better we can respond to this challenging task. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Thomas. I'm not actually participating actively in the group, but I am keeping a close eye both by listening in on the calls when I can and getting some occasional updates from you. I'm certainly very impressed with the energy and structure you've put into it, and I know you're working extremely hard, as are the members of the group, and so it's very encouraging to see, and I hope it's part of a bigger picture that we do get the credit for putting this level of effort and engagement and commitment in. Moving down the list then, there's the who is studies, Margie, but I think we might come to that as part of a bigger picture and talking about integration of the who is activity. I don't know if you want to say anything now or if we should just pick that up as part of our bigger item when Jean-Francois is going to be contributing as well.
Yes, this is Margie. Just real quick, because I don't think it's part of what Jean-Francois will cover. You know, we have the who is studies that have been going underway. One of them is final now and ready for the council to consider. I think it's something that will likely get brought up at the next council meeting through a motion. Essentially, it's a study on the feasibility of privacy proxy relay and reveal procedures. And so, you know, given the time and the content today, I don't think we'll be able to cover it, but it is something that's flagged in the pending projects list, and I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Thanks, Margie. I think from my point of view, it would be helpful perhaps in that later item, though, to, you know, one has a sense when you look at the resolution, the area that Jean-Francois will be talking to, of an overarching new initiative. So I think it would be very helpful to think about contextualizing that in respect of all of the other work that's gone on in the past and is going on, and making sure we're councillors are clear what is and isn't covered and what remains outside of that remit. So perhaps we can spend a couple of minutes on that later in the call. Julie, I don't know if you wanted to say anything on the internationalized registration data, if you wanted to update us on that one, on the translation, transliteration of internationalized registration data.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. This is Julie Headland. Just very briefly, the staff, I'm sorry, the staff is working on a preliminary issue report as requested by the GNSO, and we had requested a deadline, an extension of the deadline until 14 December. However, after some discussion with the chairs on our the GNSO council chairs on our call this Monday, we felt it would be useful to hear the discussion on who is in today's council meeting, and we're also working on some additional changes to the preliminary issue report. So we'd like to ask for a further extension to deliver the report on 7 January 2013. And this is also in consideration of the fact that many council members may be on holidays and may not have time to attend to the report if we were to deliver it before the holidays.
Thanks, Julie. I think the next item that we want to cover within this is Ching, perhaps you wanted to give us an update on the work of the IRD.
Sorry, Jonathan, I thought it was just discussed or shared by the update from Julie.
Was there anything else you wanted to add?
Oh no! Thanks. Thanks for asking. But I think the day sounds to me still reasonable. But I just like to raise the flag here. All of us know that the IDN will be given a go first in this new GTOD round. So I would hope that the staff. The ICANN staff will still be able to allocate, resource on this potential IRD project, which would definitely impact on the, on the implementation issue. This is just for the record, but thanks for the effort. Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks, Ching. So moving on then, I wanted to not bore you too much, but I did want to make a couple of remarks again at the outset of the call, or at least relatively early on. And so I've put up a single slide just to make a couple of comments. If I could have that first slide, please. Really, it's a matter of a couple of things. I wanted to remind councillors of what we talked about last time and these key focus points that I'm trying to keep my mind on, and I hope that you'll work with me on doing the same. And that's really thinking about how effectively we work together, starting with a position of trust and assuming good intentions amongst ourselves, utilizing the VCs as much as possible, in particular to include where possible and where it's okay, where it's possible to do so, collaborative work across the houses, and councillors working effectively with one another. I'm also very, very conscious, as I know a lot of you are, of the external perceptions and the relationships that the council has with other stakeholders and groups within the broader ICANN community, and I'm frankly open to any suggestions as to how we in addition to working as effectively and efficiently as possible with one another, how we improve our relationships with other members of the community and the perception of the productivity and hard work and a focus of the council as a whole. I think that the other issue, of course, is workload management and our, you know, our prioritization and ability to get through things. As I said earlier, I've seen some tremendous commitment on some of the working groups, and I hope we'll be able to go into the new year with that same level of effort. I think overall, as many of you know, and I've spoken with you individually about, as well as collectively, I mean, overall, this, for me, is about our council being seen and being productive, effective, and respected part of the community. We've nailed down the dates for the next year, so I hope we will be able to have as substantial as possible participation. I've also did some work in the background trying to look at the timing, and we've agreed to bring the 2000 UTC time forward a little to 1800 UTC. There's no happy outcome for everyone for all of this. I've seen a lot of work go on in the NTAG group, for example, where they try to shift things around, and there is no single easy answer, but I think we've done a reasonable job. I wanted to draw your attention as part of a focus on sort of on continuous improvement and ensuring that we operate effectively, and the council leadership and the policy staff plan to meet up face-to-face in January. We happen to have tagged that on to the fact that Wolf Ulrich is in Germany. Myself and Mason will be in Amsterdam, and we've got a couple of policy staff in Europe. So we've chosen Amsterdam as the location for our January meeting. We considered the ICANN Brussels office, but in the end, Amsterdam looked like it was the most practical solution. So we're going to sit down there and look through how we can continue to improve the way in which the council functions and operates effectively. And, of course, we'll have one big eye on the next meeting, which while it seems like it's a reasonable distance away and the gap between the meetings is large, I suspect there'll be high expectations of the output from Beijing. So we'll put some effort into the planning and organization of that. There are certainly, and we'll touch on this a little more as we go through the call, there were certainly some procedural issues flagged in the last council meeting, and whilst it wasn't the smoothest ride and flagged up some important points, it also reminded me that we have the SCI to assist here, and we can refer some of these more challenging issues to the SCI to deliberate and then come back to the council with potential recommendations for improvement. So we've got at least the mechanisms in place to produce continuous improvement. I'm conscious that as the final bullet point, there are some challenging items and issues for this meeting. It's a content-rich agenda, which is what some people have been very encouraged by, in the sense that I think a lot of the council's work in the past has often necessarily been focused on the whole improvements to and development of the procedures. We have a window of opportunity here where we can work on substantive issues, and just a reminder as we navigate some of those things where people have very strongly held views and in fact sometimes strongly held feelings about the issues, that we recognize that there is an opportunity to just keep the bigger picture, which is focusing on the effectiveness and reputation of the council, and I guess to pinch one of Fadi's lines, to do the right thing wherever possible, because clearly policy and procedure are fundamental to underpinning a reliable and trusted council, but it's not everything. If we only rely on policy, it has to be the substance of our output has to also be critically important. So those are a couple of thoughts to kick us off on the meeting as we go. I'm willing to and open to any questions or comments on that before we move on to the first formal item on our agenda, the item for the motion. So let me just pause for a moment and see if I do see any hands come up. Otherwise, we'll move on to the item four, which is the motion. Right, seeing no hands raised, I will move then on into the item four. There are no items in under item three on the consent agenda, so we'll go straight into item four, which is a motion that we considered at our last meeting, and as all of you will be all too well aware. I think the first thing we'll do is we'll re-present the motion, and in fact, although the motion was previously made by Jeff Newman, when it was remade for this meeting, it was made by Brian. So in the first instance, I'll ask Brian to simply read the motion, and then we'll go into a discussion, which I anticipate leading with a couple of remarks at the beginning, and then we'll open it up to councillors. So Brian, if I could ask you to re-present the motion. Oh, I'm sorry. There's a procedural point here. We don't have, as yet, have a second for the motion, so I'd like to call for a second.
I think Jeff just seconded it on the list, on the chat.
Yeah, this is Jeff. This is Jeff Newman. I will second that motion.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking at two different screens. Yeah, thank you, Jeff. So Jeff having seconded the motion, let's move on to Brian reading the motion.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'll start with the whereas. The board resolution 2011.06.20.01 authorized the president and CEO to implement the new GTLD program, which includes incorporation of text concerning protection for specific requested Red Cross and IOC names for the top level only during the initial application round until the GNSO and GAC develop policy advice based on the global public interest. The IOC RC drafting team established by the GNSO Council has considered a number of different options with respect to protections of both the IOC and the RC-RC terms in response to the GAC proposal to provide permanent protection for such terms, including at the second level in the new GTLDs. The solution proposed by the IOC-RC drafting team to initiate a PDP and to provide temporary reservation of the exact match IOC-RC names was posted for public comment on the 28th of September 2012 and closed on November 9, 2012. The GONSO has now initiated a policy development process to evaluate possible protections for certain international organization names in all GTLDs, including specifically whether to recommend policies to protect IOC-RC-RC names. And therefore, the IOC-RC drafting team recommends that the GNSO Council recommend to the board that it adopt the second recommendation of the IOC-RC drafting team, providing for temporary reservation of the exact match IOC-RC names prior to the delegation of the first round of new GTLDs. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the GNSO Council adopts the IOC-RC drafting team's recommendation to temporarily reserve the exact match of IOC and RC-RC second-level domain names listed in Section 2.2.1.2.3 of the applicant guidebook, and per the GAC recommendation of September 14, 2011, pending the outcome of the recently launched policy development process involving international governmental and non-governmental organizations. That the GNSO Council thanks the members of the IOC-RC drafting team for their efforts in producing these recommendations and hereby disbands the IOC-RC drafting team, and that the chair of the GNSO Council is authorized to forward these recommendations to the ICANN board.
Thank you, Brian. Now, our next point on this is to discuss the motion. Now, clearly we discussed it since it is exactly the same motion as was presented previously. We did discuss it at the last meeting. That's not to say we can't and shouldn't discuss it now, but I suspect one of the things on councillors' minds is the fact that we have a, in fact, I know it is, that we have a motion that has appeared before the council that was the same as it was previously. So if you'll indulge me, I'd like to make a couple of remarks on that and then offer an opportunity to Brian to speak as well as Petter because they were sort of caught up in the issue or part of the issue at the last meeting and then open it to more general discussion. My thoughts on this, I've obviously have given it quite a lot of thought because we had the issues at the last meeting. We've had the board meeting in between and all that's gone on. Is that there's a couple of things, really. People questioned, one of the questions was my raising the issue of abstentions once the vote had been initially cast. Whilst I accept that presenting some comments about that may have concerned councillors from a procedural point of view, I think there's a couple of thoughts I have on that. One that abstentions are somewhat unique in our context in that in the impact they have, and in particular, I was mindful that this was the first vote being undertaken by a number of councillors, including one that actually abstained in the first instance on that motion. So I felt it was incumbent on me to make sure that it was understood what the consequences of those are. I realize not everyone will agree with that, but that's just by way of explanation. Later, when it transpired what was actually going on, I considered reopening the motion, and in fact, a primary reason for not doing so was that a couple of councillors had left the meeting. With hindsight, I think it would have been improper to reopen the motion in any event, and I accept that actually. And all I would say to you is that again, the motivation for doing so was not in any way aligned with a house or a position that I had or was voting in, but more in out of concern for A, the fact that it seemed to be an extraordinary situation, and I was concerned in particular the impact of that on the overall perceptions of the council, which remains my, you know, a primary focus I have. In any event, as time has passed, what's happened is that a motion has been resubmitted to the council at a subsequent meeting, which is either substantially similar or, in fact, in this case, identical. And I know that's caused concern, and it actually, frankly, causes me concern. And I think it is something which we should raise with the SCI, and I have every intention of ensuring that that happens. And, of course, the other issue that this raised was, well, out of declarations of interest, and there was some degree of uncertainty or at least potential for confusion. And what I've done there is rebriefed myself. I've encouraged policy staff to be as familiar as possible, so they are on hand and as knowledgeable as possible to intervene should it be necessary in a similar or related circumstance in future. And I'd obviously encourage all councillors to do the same. So those are my remarks about the context of this resolution previously and again in this case. Brian, I know you were right in the centre of the storm of all of this last time, and I wonder if you might like to explain a little bit of the background, because we didn't get an opportunity to do so either last time or in the intervening period, and it might help if councillors understood what led up to the previous set of circumstances.
Sure. Thank you so much, Jonathan, and I want to thank all the councillors for this opportunity to just speak to you briefly. I personally abstained from the previous vote due to Steptoe's attorney-client relationship with the American Red Cross and the belief that this required me to abstain from the vote. I, as it turns out, as long as my interest was stated or included in my statement of interest, I'm free to vote on any matter relating to the American Red Cross. And I do apologize that I didn't seek clarification for that earlier. It is something in the past where I'd either abstained from voting or did pass a proxy, and it wasn't until this instance that I was able to seek clarification and to better understand the rules on conflicts of interest, and the fact that it was included in my statement was sufficient. ICANN staff did clarify on the call that the counselors may vote on a motion regardless of whether they or their clients have an interest in the result. However, this clarification unfortunately came only after the vote was concluded, as we'll recall, at which time the council chair was unable to reopen the vote due to councillor attrition on the call, which Jonathan just outlined. This could be preempted in the future through better availability of guidance, I think, on GNSO council regulations and procedures to the councillors, and I would welcome an opportunity for all of us to be able to refresh our understanding of these very important rules. And I know, obviously, there's a lot of focus right now on conflict at ICANN, and this is something that's very sensitive and very high profile, and I think we all want to do a good job moving forward. I do appreciate, again, everyone giving me this opportunity to speak for a couple minutes. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. And I thought before opening it up to the floor, I would offer Petter the opportunity to explain, because in his case during the last meeting, as you recall, Petter initially abstained, and then once I had explained to him or reminded him of the consequence of that abstention change, and I know that concerned some councillors. So Petter, you perhaps might like to explain your position, and then I think we should open it up to other councillors to comment or provide input on either the procedural issues or indeed the substance of the motion before we go to vote on it. Thanks. Petter?
Hello?
Hi, Petter.
Yes?
I was hoping you might just say a couple of words about...
Do you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, good. Yes, it was just simply that I was not 100% sure. I was pretty close to say yes, but that's why I initially abstained. And I did not know that this was counted as a no. So once I got that information, I changed it to a clear yes, which I will keep, and also thanks for getting that information on how to count when you abstain.
Thanks, Petter. It probably serves to further underline the responsibility of all of us as councillors, and in fact, perhaps the council as a whole, to ensure that we, the councillors, are properly trained and mindful of the procedures. Joy, I see your hand is up, so let me, without any further ado, hand over to you to have an opportunity to talk.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Brian, for your comments, and Peter for your remarks. A few things that NCSG sort of discussed this since the last council meeting, and not wanting to delay the vote on the motion itself, I do think there are a couple of important points to raise. I think firstly, thank you for apologising, Brian, for your action. I think that the situation through the meeting somewhat into confusion, and I think the lesson that, the takeaway from that is that councillors, I think, should be informing themselves, in sufficiently inadequate time before meetings to know procedurally about dealing with particularly abstentions. My particular concern around the abstention is that the GSO operating procedures are pretty clear on abstentions in relation to volitional abstentions or obligatory ones. And in particular, one of the specific examples in the GSO operating procedures is councillors representing clients in relation to matters before the council, although this isn't a legal matter, it's a motion. So I think it's somewhat, although staff did clarify on the call the question of the conflict with the opportunity for discussion, I think we would have realised that an abstention still could have been taken, depending on if it was a volitional or obligatory one. And in either case, the procedures in council are quite clear about how to remedy that, which is simply have someone else take the vote. So I think that there are sort of two follow-up things for us and suggestions for clarification and reference to the Standing Committee on Improvements. One is definitely in relation to the conflict of interest. We think that there are certain circumstances where council may need to protect itself from a conflict of interest, and we think that the operating procedures in this regard need some guidance. And secondly, on the resubmitting of the motion, we do think that resubmitting exactly the same motion does set an extremely bad precedent. And we don't want that to be something that is repeated, and we would like SCI guidance on this and a referral to SCI after the motion in order to get that guidance. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Joy, for points well made and well taken. I mean, I have to say, particularly on the latter, I'm strongly supportive. It's unusual to have had to do this, to say the least, and what it highlighted is that we don't have clear procedural ways of dealing with this, and so it's relevant to me that it gets referred to the SCI. Jeff, I see your hand was up, but it's gone down again. Just double-checking that you don't now need to speak.
Well, this is Jeff. I only was going to say that I understand Joey's point about not having motions resubmitted, but I'm not sure I see anything per se that's necessarily wrong with that, especially in extraordinary circumstances like this one. But I think it's something good for the SCI group to look at.
Thanks, Jeff. Wolfgang. David, perhaps we can...
In favor to, bring this back again and again and again, as long as we have the quote-unquote right results. I think it was more or less rejected in the last meeting, and we missed this procedural confusion. I was not there. I would have voted with no, and so I will also vote with no today. So that means I'm a little bit really confused about the whole process, and I think we should just move forward. You know, we have now a lot of new issues on the agenda, and probably this is not needed anymore.
Wolfgang, are you suggesting we simply move forward to the vote? I know David is next in the queue, but I just need to clarify what you were actually saying there.
My understanding is, you know, we have voted last time. It was rejected. And so that means there is no need to vote it again. And even if you go to the substance of the issue, so we have moved already ahead of this, you know, with the new working group and the new PDB. I do not see anything which is really needed in the resolution. It's just to please the GAC.
David?
On mute, huh?
David, are you on mute? Can you come off if you would like to speak?
Oh, sorry? Am I on mute?
Fire away, David.
Hello?
Hi, David. We hear
you
now.
Yep. Okay. I just wanted to say, in general, I don't want to make a particularly big issue of it on this occasion, but in general, there are very good reasons why just simply resubmitting the same motion to a future meeting, if it fails, is very difficult to do under most sets of standing orders, and it really shouldn't be something that is regularly done, and we really should make sure that the SIG should do it. And while Jeff said there's extraordinary circumstances, really just the vote not going the way you want or making a mistake in how you vote are not extraordinary circumstances, considered in most sets of standing orders. Really, in order to justify resubmission, you either have to get you need to get a higher level of vote to pass something that's resubmitted in many sets of standing orders, or you need to show that there are reasons why it needs to be resubmitted, such as a change to the motion or new information that's come to light or something. So on the whole, I think we should definitely avoid this as a practice, and the circumstances that led to it this time should not be considered as a precedent for this to be done again. That's all.
Thank you, David. That's a point well made. I'm very conscious that this is an important procedural issue that councillors will want to speak to. But I would remind you that I think we are committed to referring it to the SCI, and so to the extent that debate and discussion can be had in the SCI, I would encourage you to do so. So if you could keep your points brief, but I am mindful that everyone would like to and needs an opportunity to talk. I have Jeff next in the queue. Wolfgang and David, if you could put your hands down, please.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff, look, I just want to bring up the point that we are supposed to be a consensus-driven organization and not one that's driven by votes. And that was what was made clear several years ago when we initially did this reform, that we were supposed to focus less on voting. Unfortunately, we still have to vote. But if a topic at one point didn't have consensus or enough to pass through, and then later on does have the consensus to pass through, again, there's nothing wrong with that, especially when we're supposed to de-emphasize the voting. Let's not take our position as to whether we support it or whether we're against the substance of this one motion to drive the rest of it. The principle is that we're supposed to be coming to consensus, and if we couldn't do it at one meeting, we couldn't come to consensus, but at the next meeting we can. I think it's ridiculous not to just have a procedural obstacle to say we can't or shouldn't bring it up. So Let's keep the focus on the substance, and if we come to consensus on something, I don't care if it's been brought up once or twice or 10 times, we should still bring it up again. That's just my own view. Thanks.
Wolf, thanks, Jeff. Wolf, would you like to say something?
Yes, thank you, Thomas, and Wolf speaking. In this case, I cannot agree with what Wolfgang was saying. Well, just to continue, that we have voted last time, and that because we had really a special case, and also there's nothing preventing the council to resubmit a motion under those circumstances and in accordance with the present rules. That's one comment. The other thing is, if we would like to refer that to the that issue to the SCI, I wonder whether I would say, in this way, from my experience, if we could not just verbally submit it to the SCI, but just point out somebody, maybe Joy, could start write something together under which a question or like some points, you know, in the context of that issue, which the SCI should be aware about. So that would be helpful, I would say. So otherwise, we would just try to start in the SCI and understand, there was this case here. How should this case be dealt with in the future? Maybe there's something special which we should take into consideration. We would welcome some input from the council or from Joy. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolfgang. That's a good point. And I think what I understand to be asking for is a specifically formulated or framed question or questions to the SCI. And I think that's vital. We certainly shouldn't expect you to simply pick it up from the dialogue of the meeting. Joy, I hope you will be willing to perhaps take that up in the way that's been suggested and perhaps help in framing the question. Thanks, Joy. I see you on the chat as agreeing to do so. Zahid.
Unmute.
Zahid, if you would like to talk, can you come off mute, please?
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Now, Zahid. We can hear you now.
Excellent. Sorry. No, I was saying that my thunder has been stolen by what Jeff said on the chat right now. We're an organization that has freedom of expression, etc., and it's at heart in a sense. And stopping people or chilling effect on bringing things back to council seems to me a little odd. Second, I support everything that Jeff has said, which is that, you know, if it's brought back and is voted down again, that's fine. But we shouldn't sort of create a situation where people are unable to bring things back. There could be hundreds of reasons why it didn't pass the first time. So that's one. Secondly, the question that is important is, would it have made a difference had Bride been allowed to vote? If that one vote would have made a difference, then it becomes even more important that, or even more relevant, that the motion be reintroduced, if it has to be, because it might make a difference this time around. So those are just a few thoughts I had, and I know that it will go back to the SCI, so we'll see what they have to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Zahid. I had anticipated, and it has been borne out by the discussion, that there are some strongly held views on this from a procedural point of view. I think it's only proper that I'd like to bring this to a close relatively soon. I will certainly close the queue to Thomas, who's the last person in the queue at this stage, on the procedural issues. I think we've given it a good airing, and we now need to make that airing take place in the right forum, which is the SCI. But Thomas, please go ahead if you have a comment on either the substance of the motion or the procedure. But in any event, after you, I think we should close the discussion on the procedure and ideally on the substance and move to the vote.
Thank you, Jonathan. I would like to highlight one point that has been neglected a little bit in my view in this discussion, and that is that the whole problem did not only arise because a councillor, or in fact two councillors, changed their mind during the session. The problem arose because councillors left. And I think that needs to be put into the equation. And I think that we need to make sure that the council can actually work during the whole two-hour session, or as long as it might take. And therefore, you know, councillors leaving should at least have a proxy in place so that we are fully functional. The other point that I'd like to make is that I'm not sure. I mean, we will certainly ask the SCI. That is perfectly fine. But I think it's a general rule that Parliament, and I think Ellen mentioned this, or other fora can reopen the discussion on certain items, and putting in place procedural hurdles to limit that might be dangerous in the light of this this specific case. You know, do we actually want to have something something carved in stone on that? I would prefer to leave it up to the council leadership to not put those requests for reopening discussions on the agenda if they have the impression that this is actually abusive, in order to change a vote until the or the outcome of a discussion until a result that is pleasing an organization is reached. So I would rather leave it up to the discretion of council leadership rather than working on specific procedures. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Some good contributions there, and I see Alan was supportive of that. Joav, I had said I'd close the queue on procedural matters. Thanks, Ching. I see your support is up as well in the queue. Joav, please, if you could be brief, and then we really should bring this to a close and close the issue we've got.
Yeah, actually, one sentence to follow up on what Thomas said regarding Parliament having that can rediscuss an issue, but usually there are procedures about that, and there are some limitations. I know that, like in our Parliament, there's like you can't raise it for 45 days or something like that. So just saying, you know, if we get to that point, we need to consider that also.
Thanks, Joav. And certainly from my point of view as chair, even if having the guidance back from the SCI that was in discretion, I mean, discretion is a challenging tool to have to use, but in any event, it would be useful to have had some discussion, and I think the right forum is now outside of the council. So we'd like to ask councillors to support me now in moving to item 4.3, which is to vote on this motion, and we'll proceed to a roll call vote, which I'll ask Glenn to manage and take.
Certainly.
To do that.
Certainly, Jonathan. I will start. John Berard?
Yeah, yes, Glenn.
Wolf Ulrich Knobben?
Yes.
Wendy Salsa? Wendy, can you hear me?
No.
No, can you hear me? No.
Maria Farrell, and I will ask Norbert Klein, the temporary alternate, to vote, please.
I also say no.
Thank you, Norbert. Joe Lidicote?
No.
Day Jamil?
That's a yes.
Jeff Newman?
Yes.
Lanre Ajayi?
Yes.
Thomas Rickert?
Yes.
Mason Cole?
Yes.
Brian Winterfeld?
Yes.
Osvaldo Nova?
Yes.
Joef Kieran?
Yes.
Ching Chau?
Yes.
Jonathan Robinson?
Yes.
Peter Rindfors?
Yes.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter?
No.
Magali Pazello? I note that Magali is not on the call, and neither is Magali on the Adobe Connect. So she is absent. Volker Greimann?
With reference to the comments I made last time, yes.
David Cake?
No.
No. There are the contracted party house. There are 7 votes in favor. That's 100%. For the non-contracted party house, we have 7 votes in favor and 5 votes against, with 1 person being absent. So that is 53.8%. And the motion needs a simple majority to pass. Margie, am I correct in that? I think that is what was stated.
Yes, that's correct.
And so the motion passes.
Thank you, Glenn, and thank you for taking the time to talk through that, in particular the associated issues of procedure, and we've taken some clear learnings away from that whole thing. Moving on then to the next item on our agenda, which is item 5, the motion on the advice letter relating to consumer choice, trust and competition. This is a motion that's been submitted by John Berard. Can I confirm that it has been seconded? Yes, it has, by Osvaldo. Thank you. So, John, if you could proceed immediately to read the motion.
Certainly. Whereas on December 10th, 2010, the ICANN board adopted Resolution 30, requesting advice from the GNSO, the CCNSO, ALAC, and GAC on establishing the definition, measures, and 3-year targets for those measures for competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the context of the domain name system. Such advice to be provided for discussion at the ICANN International Public Meeting in San Francisco in March of 2011. Whereas the GNSO Council approved the charter for a consumer choice, trust, and competition working group to produce an advice letter for consideration by supporting organizations and advisory committees to assist them in responding to the board requests for establishing the definition, measures, and 3-year targets for those measures for competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the context of the domain name system. Whereas the working group created a draft advice letter and posted it for public comment, whereas working group reviewed all public comments and feedback from public session and produced a advice letter for consideration by the supporting organizations and advisory committees. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the GNSO Council endorses these recommendations. Thank you for that correction. These recommendations for establishing the definition, measures, and 3-year targets for those measures of competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice in the context of the domain name system as described in the final advice letter. Resolved further, the GNSO Council approves the delivery of the final advice letter to the ICANN board. And resolved further, the GNSO Council thanks the working group members for their diligent and persistent efforts on this important topic and disbands the working group. If I may add my own personal addendum to this before we kick off the discussion, you will recall that this motion had surfaced before but was then withdrawn. I believe that the parties interested and involved have worked through what were necessary changes to that advice letter and to those metrics, so as to offer respectful and appropriate distinction between those new GTLDs that will be available to the public and those that will be closely held. I want to thank Jeff for his participation in that regard. My feeling is that a lot of what might have otherwise not been addressed has clearly and diligently been addressed in the time that we have taken since 2 meetings ago when this motion was first offered up. And I hope that most of my fellow counselors will see the value of the effort. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John Berard. I've got Wendy Seltzer, followed by Jeff Newman, currently in the queue. Wendy.
Thanks. I would like to propose an amendment. I don't know if it will be considered friendly, to remove the first resolved endorsing the recommendations. I'd be happy to pass on the letter, but as I disagree with many of the recommendations, and the NCSG's disagreement is noted in the letter. I would not vote to endorse the recommendations. I'll have additional substantive comment, but wanted to raise that question. Whether
John?
That's a friendly amendment.
Thanks.
I do feel friendly towards Wendy, but I do not feel friendly towards this amendment. So I would not accept it as a friendly amendment.
Okay. And then I'd like to address a bit more specifically the concerns that I have here. These are concerns that I've raised in the group, namely that I don't think the way trust is being defined is appropriate for the general purpose nature of the domain name system. We don't talk about do you trust your pad of printing paper, and similarly, I don't think it's appropriate for us to be defining the trustworthiness of the DNS in terms of such metrics as how many complaints were filed under UDRP or URF. And I'm concerned that although the metrics aren't currently defined as enforceable metrics, that we're creating a regime in which it's expected that registries and registrars become police for registrants and the content of their speech using the domain name system and the Internet, which I don't think is an appropriate role for ICANN or those parties in the ICANN ecosystem. So I think we set the wrong precedent by endorsing these metrics.
Thanks for that, Wendy. Jeff, I know you are next in the queue, and I see, John, your hand has gone up as well, and I suspect in response to Wendy's comments. But let's respect the position in the queue, and Jeff, you go ahead at this point.
Yeah, I'm not sure. My comments are really on the main motion and not on the amendment. But
defer to John for a moment then, Jeff, and then come back to your point?
Yeah, I'll defer to John on the to respond to the amendment.
I just wanted to bring the council's attention to the fact that Wendy's points, which have been passionately and persistently made, are a part of the advice letter in a minority report. This is I guess what I'm saying is that even though the decision was made not to move to adopt the position that Wendy so eloquently espoused, it was the considered opinion of the working group to make sure that her concerns are carried forward in this case as a minority report attended to the letter. So I want people to appreciate that by voting for this motion, we are not erasing those concerns.
Thanks, John. I'll move on to Jeff, and I see, Wendy, you've put yourself back in the queue.
Yeah, actually, Jonathan, if we could just finish the discussion on the amendment and then get that out of the way, then I'll make my comments on the overall motion. So I'm not in the queue for the amendment.
No problem. Wendy, would you like to make a final comment then in this dialogue?
Yes, just I forwarded to the list my a longer version of my comments. I would be happy to have the full version of my comments included in the report rather than the initial version that's there.
Thanks, Wendy. So those are on the mailing list, on the council mailing list, are they?
Just sent to the council mailing list. That
all right.
Previously
right.
Have been
you.
On the CCI list.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Wendy. Let's move to Jeff then and hear your input on the overall motion then, Jeff.
Well, I mean, should we vote on the – I think the procedure is to vote on the amendment now, and then if that gets added or defeated, then that will affect the overall motion.
Thanks for reminding me of that, Jeff. So can we put that is the amendment contained in the motion at this stage. Marika, I saw that, well, I guess the amendment is simply to square bracket that first resolve clause. Thanks, Wendy. That's clear, to drop the resolve one clause. John, do you have something additional to say before we move to vote on the amendment?
I'm asking, is the appending of this longer letter from Wendy a second amendment?
Sure.
So, Wendy, we need to be clear which amendment we're voting on. Is it to...
First, let's vote on the amendment to drop the first resolved, please.
All right. Let's proceed to vote on that then. So, remind me, please, of the procedure here. Do we take a roll call vote, or is there another way in which we can vote on this amendment? I think we simply have to go to a roll call.
We can do a roll call vote, Jonathan.
So can we hear in either in favor of the amendment or not in favor of the amendment, please?
David Cake, in favor of the amendment?
Yes.
Mason,
yes.
Cole, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Jeff Newman, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Jonathan Robinson, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Norbert Klein for Maria Farrell, please, in favor of the amendment?
Abstain.
Abstain. Wendy Salter, in favor of the amendment?
Yes.
Osvaldo Nuova, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Joy Lidicote, in favor of the amendment?
Yes.
Volker Greimann, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Wolfgang Kleinbecht, in favor of the amendment?
Yes.
Lanre Ejayi, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Yoif Kieran, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Peter Rintforth, in favor of the amendment?
No.
Zahid Jamil, in favor of the amendment?
This is Zahid. I'm a little confused about what we're voting on. Which amendment? Are we saying dropping off resolve one? Just want to be clear.
Yes,
I believe that
it's dropping of resolved one.
The answer is no.
Ching Chao?
No.
Bosworth Knoben?
No.
John Berard?
No.
Magali Pazello? I do not believe that she has joined the call yet. Absent. Thomas Rickett?
No.
Ryan Winterfelt?
No.
The contracted party house, 7 votes against. The non-contracted party house have 7 votes against, 4 votes in favor, 1 abstention, and 1 person absent. May I ask for the reason for the abstention, Norbert?
I was not really clear, as another person later on said, about the amendment clause. That is why I abstained.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The amendment does not pass, Jonathan.
Thanks, Glenn. So we have a second proposed amendment now, which is to append Wendy's fuller reasons, as I understand it. Wendy, would you like to speak to that?
Yeah, I'd like to suggest that we don't need to vote, but rather could simply include those as an extension of the remarks included in the report.
Go on.
So the report, the advice letter includes the working group's approved take on those comments. So in order for us to append this longer version, we would have to vote as an amendment to replace the one that the working group had had moved forward. So it's not just a simple swapping out, but it is in fact an amendment which I do not view as friendly, and so would require a vote.
Thanks, John. I've had a suggestion from Alan, which is a sensible one, that we indicate a support for or a point against the motion in the chat. I believe, and one can do that by a simple agree or disagree in the chat, and I believe that we have everyone in the chat is... is anyone, I think that's the case. I hope that we do have everyone. If you could make it known on the audio if you can't vote in the chat, otherwise I will assume that you can. So,
Jonathan, this is Jeff. If I could just make one comment on this proposed amendment. I don't think we need to have an amendment on this. I think we could allow Wendy to make a statement as a counselor, as any counselor can, if they agree or disagree with a motion, and have it submitted separately, not as something that would change anything in the report, but just a separate statement on her thoughts. I don't think that, I think every counselor has the right to do that. It's not done too often, but it doesn't really need to be a motion or an amendment. I think Wendy's got that right, just like any counselor does, to send something to the board.
That sounds like a sensible suggestion. Wendy, are you happy with that as a proposed way forward, that you make your position clear to the council and forward your comment to the board?
Sure.
Thanks, Wendy. Appreciate that. So I think that's...
expedience.
I think that then puts us in a position to be able to put the motion to the vote. So, Jeff, although I'm aware you've had your hand up for some time and wanted to make a comment in respect of the original motion as it stood, so please make your comment, and then we'll move it to the vote.
Yeah, I'll make it brief. I just want to thank the group, the working group, really. I know I've been a little thorn in its side for the last few months, but I think the changes have been, I think, really beneficial. I think they reflect the changing nature or the actual applications that were received. Is it perfect? No, but I think it's fair, it's balanced, and like I said, I do thank them for the work that they've done and appreciate the fact that they, even though it was after their final report, that they went back and revisited the issue. So just a simple thank you, and that I will be supporting the motion.
Okay. If we could then move to a vote on this motion, that would be great. Glenn, if you could take the roll call for the vote on this motion, please.
I'll do that, Jonathan. Volker Greimann?
Yes.
Thomas Rickert?
Yes.
Osvaldo Nuova?
Yes.
John Berard?
Yes.
Say Jamil?
Yes.
David Cake?
No.
Jeff Newman?
Yes.
Wolf Ulrich Knobin?
Yes.
Peter Rindfuss?
Yes.
Joachim Kieran?
Yes.
Jing Zhao?
Yes.
Magali Pazello? I believe she's not on the call, so she's absent. Jonathan Robinson?
Yes.
Joelle Dicote?
No.
Lanre Ajayi?
Yes.
Norbert Klein for Maria Farrell, please.
No.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter?
Wolfgang has dropped off the call. He may need to either vote in the chat or we may need to hold on for a minute while we reconnect to him.
Yes. We are calling out to him. Mason Cole?
Yes.
Wendy Seltzer?
No.
Brian Winterfeld?
Yes.
We are waiting for Wolfgang to be reconnected. I see that we are trying to call him, but have not succeeded.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Jeff Newman. I just posted something. Can we get the vote tally without Wolfgang? And if it affects the outcome, then we should wait. But if it doesn't affect the outcome, can we move on and just have his vote recorded and included?
Sounds like a practical suggestion, Jeff. Yeah, Wolfgang is on the chat, so I hope he will be able to vote on the chat. Let's give that a moment, and otherwise, and then
yes.
We'll take that route, Jeff.
Wolfgang, can you hear me?
No, I can't hear you. Yes, okay. Sorry
yes.
for...
What do you vote, Wolfgang, please?
It's on motion. I vote with no.
No. Thank you very much. The results are 100% in favor for the contracted party house. There are 6 votes in favor for the non-contracted party house. There are 6 votes against for the non-contracted party house, and 1 person is absent. So that's 46.2% for the non-contracted party house. And I believe it must have a simple majority of both houses. Is that correct, Margie?
Yes, that's correct.
So it does not have simple majority of the non-contracted party house.
Thanks. So the motion is not carried.
The motion is not carried.
right.
Right, so moving on to the next item. The next item on the agenda is the motion in connection with the suspension of the PDP process, which, as Wolf Ulrich informed us earlier, has been withdrawn.
No, John, this is John. There were five no votes on that motion, yes?
Len, can you confirm the votes from the non-contracted parties house, please?
I will do that. There were six no votes. Oh, I'm very sorry. There was a mistake. Brian Winterfeld voted in favor.
So I'm unsure. I mean, it seems to me that the motion passed.
Yes, I'm sorry. Brian Winterfeld, sorry. Can I just make sure you voted in favor?
Yes, I did, and there was some kind of noise interference at the time I voted, so that probably distracted you, Glenn.
Yes. So that is quite right. So there is the motion passes. I'm very sorry about that.
Right. So to reconfirm, then the votes. Can you confirm the tally from both the contracted parties house and the non-contracted parties house for the avoidance of doubt, Glenn?
The contracted party house, there are seven votes in favour. For the non-contracted party house, there are seven votes in favour, five votes against, and one person is absent. So there is 53.8%. I'm very sorry about that.
So there is a simple majority, at least a simple majority in both houses, which means the motion is carried.
Yes.
Apologies to all for that confusion. So motion item 5, motion on consumer choice, trust, and competition, the motion is passed.
It's been a long time since I've had to rely on my math skills.
Thanks, John. All right. Moving on to the next item, then, which is the trademark clearinghouse straw man proposal. I just highlight with you the time we're on. We are around half an hour behind our schedule. I did warn councillors in advance that we would need time for discussion, and this meeting may run on beyond the standard allotted 2 hour, and so you should be forewarned. I understand that most of you are in a position to continue, and since we don't have items to vote on, it's not absolutely necessary, but I would encourage you, to the extent that you can, to please stay on the call. That's just a time check to forewarn you as to where we're headed. Let's move on to item 7. We're going to kick it off with an update from staff, led by Margie, who has a presentation to remind us of the content of the straw man proposal. And I'd remind you that we have a letter from ICANN CEO asking us to consider this and the items in it and to work on a council response. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Okay, so I have on the slides up in Adobe Connect a brief overview of what the straw man model provides. It includes additional features that weren't in the original trademark clearinghouse, but came out of discussions since Toronto, out of implementation-related meetings that FODI convened since Toronto. I won't go through the details of the features given the time period, but it's there, and it's also posted for public comment right now. The public comment period for the trademark clearinghouse model is open until early February. And essentially, there's four aspects of them. They're summarized on the slide related to things that have to do with the notices, and the period associated with trademark claim notices. There's also additional clarity on what labels would be allowed to be included in the trademark clearinghouse. Specifically, on item 4, for example, it does say that that domain labels that have been determined to have been previously abused, such as been the subject of UDRPs or legal action, could be added to the trademark clearinghouse record and those records would receive a trademark claims notice. So there's more detail in the documents that are published for public comment, but this is the highlights for the council. So with regard to the next steps, as Jonathan mentioned, FADI has requested that the GNSO Council provide policy guidance on these additional inclusions into the Trademark Clearinghouse, and there is a public comment forum open until February 5th. It's also, if you take a look at the public comment forum, there's an additional item that is also open for public comment, and it's this limited preventive registration model that was proposed by the IPC and the BC. I just wanted to point out that it's not part of the straw man proposal, but it is something that staff is seeking public comment on separately. And in a note to Jonathan that he circulated earlier this morning, FADI noted that the timeline for the council response could be up until the end of February to allow time for evaluation of the public comment or to perhaps convene a working group. So the next steps for the council is to consider what it wants to do and whether it wants to focus on the draft response that Mason Cole has circulated to the list. And that is the next step for the council. And then related to this is the defense of registrations issue, which has been before the council several times. And unfortunately, because of agenda and timeline, we haven't been able to actually cover it. I think it was supposed to be talked about in Toronto. But I just want to refresh the council's memory on this issue. That earlier in the year there was a public comment period that was open on the issue of defensive applications at the top level for new GTLDs. But in that public comment forum, it was clear that there was a lot of comments that focused specifically on protections at the second level. So back in April, the board GTLD committee directed staff to provide this briefing paper on defensive registrations at the second level. And sorry, I just lost my connection here. hold on a second. Okay, there we go. And there was a briefing paper that was actually published for the council's consideration. The board also asked the GNSO council to consider whether additional work on defensive registration should be undertaken at the second level. And since that request, the council hasn't formally considered this. The reason the briefing paper was there and the reason why this is on the agenda for the council to consider is to determine whether would like to take additional steps on this topic. And this topic is related to the IPC BC recommendation that I mentioned earlier, this preventative registrations mechanism. That's open to public comment now, that essentially would give an implemented mechanism for trademark holders to prevent second-level registrations upon a payment of a reasonable fee. And so with that, I'll leave it for discussion among the council.
Thanks, Margie. I had in my notes that there may be some form of input from Brian, but I suspect that's really in and around the paper on the defensive registration. So my understanding is, Margie, that you've covered off staff input this day.
Oh, yes, and I apologize. Brian couldn't make it. He had a personal issue to deal with this morning, so he asked me to cover. And so on this last slide, I have the link to the paper. But essentially, it talks about what I mentioned earlier, whether the council would like to take any further action with regards to the issue of second-level defensive registration.
All right. So in my understanding is we've got Fadi's letter. We've got the straw man, which has four substantive points in it. We have within Fadi's letter the mention of the model, although it's not technically part of the straw man model. We've got mention of the limited preventative registrations mechanism proposed by the IPC and BC. And we also have an outstanding item, which is to make some response or comment or input on this this briefing paper on that staff prepared a little while back now, and it is sitting on our agenda relating to the issue of second level defensive registrations. We have a little more time. I sensed in the run-up to this that there were some quite strong views, so I don't know how much time will make a difference, but I think the good that we do have the luxury of an opportunity to discuss this now. I think it's very useful to be able to discuss it in person or over the telephone on audio, and to pick it up further on list and see, as you suggested, Margie, whether as far as Farley's letter is concerned, whether we build on Mason's. But I would encourage councillors to also consider this issue of how we might respond to the second level defensive registrations paper. Zahid, I see your hand is up.
Hi, I just, you know, in light of the Mayan calendar, anything I say about this may not matter, but I wanted to ask, and I hear from Margie, there's a comment period that is open with respect to this, and I was wondering whether it would be appropriate for us to wait for the comment period to close and consider comments before doing something on this. And so just a procedural question, just wanted to see if that is what people think of that.
Well, my understanding of Fadi's letter, Zahid, is that was what he was giving us a time to do and take as input into the whole process. But I think we have the opportunity to act ourselves and at least to open the discussion as to the council views, either of the councillors and reflecting their groups themselves. So whilst we might want to take that as a data point, I think we shouldn't be wholly reliant on the public comment input, but certainly we have the time to feed that into our discussions. Would anyone else like to speak to this? It's a pretty substantial issue. I know there have been some concerns over the way in which it's been handled. I think this is an opportunity for council to discuss it and formalize our input and feed that back to Fadi. So it's an excellent opportunity, regardless of strength or substance of your feelings. So it would be very useful to hear any input in and around this topic. And so I'd encourage councillors to participate in this discussion. I know we have had some on this discussion, but it would be very useful to hear any input now. Wolf Ulrich, followed by Petter and Brian. I see the hands are starting to come up now. Wolf Ulrich.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. My first comment would be, well, which is then a question afterwards on how shall we deal with that. So because on the one hand, you know, so we are as council, we are asked for a response to Fadi, but in addition, so we have in the background our constituencies and stakeholder groups which are going to deal with that items as well and may respond by themselves as stakeholder groups and constituencies. So in this respect, so we had, I can also speak for the ISPCP so far, because we have an ongoing discussion on the strawman issues, and we have just for us, it's more, let me summarize, so where we are right now is that we, from the procedural point of view, we have an issue with what's going on right now with that. But from the content issue, we would like to be a little bit more refraining. That means more more neutral on the content, since we agree that there is some issue which has not been covered from our point of view in the past with the existing AGB. So for us, it's important in general that the bottom-up policy process would be kept, so it's important, and that this process is not going to be bypassed right now or also in the future. That's one point. On the other hand, second point is that the the Stormont proposal, from our point of view, touches very heavily the question of policy versus implementation, and that needs to be discussed and also decided on by the council, let me say, or not by the council, but in the community. Another point is that the schedule for the tight schedule for the new GDLT program should not be affected, impacted in a negative way by discussing that and maybe also working out this is a storm so that's an important point. So to us, any changes to the trademark clearinghouse or the AGB or the wildlife protection mechanisms in this round are really essential, and the GNSO should take up most of those proposals in a due order. So these are comments, well, just summarized from our ongoing discussions I would like to raise here, and for me then it's a question how we really deal with that from the council's point of view, how we work on that answer, and in context with what is going on in the different stakeholder groups, constituencies. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolf. So there's clearly work ongoing, and that's likely to be fed into, I suspect, the public comments process, and it's a question of reconciling that with any work that is done at the council level as well. Let's move to Petta, and then I've got Brian and Adam and Wendy in the queue.
Well, first I just agree that the council should continue to consider the proposals, but not take any official action until the close of the public comment and reply window. And I also formally would like to add that the letter should identify both those in favor and those not, and allow a minority view to be sent to FADI as well.
Thanks, Petta. Brian?
Thank you, Jonathan. I want to reiterate what Petter said, that I think that it would be helpful to reflect on the full range of viewpoints that we're going to hear through the public comment period. And so further to the communication that FADI sent to you, we believe that the council really should allow for the public comment period to close so we can really see the full range of input from the community before we give our feedback. In addition, the council's letter to FADI, we think, should be responsive to his request, which we feel that the current letter is not entirely, and should specifically identify which councillors compose any majority position, and we should set forth a minority position as well, if there is one. The IPC clearly supports the straw man and limited preventative proposals, and we're frankly surprised and a little disappointed on the council in light of the fact that our understanding is representatives from each of the stakeholder groups participated in the meetings in Brussels and Los Angeles. It was not just a meeting between FADI and the IPC, and the ICANN summary of the straw man proposal includes the name of each representative that was there and that participated in the meetings, and our understanding is that this was supposed to be a document that came out of the consensus of the participants. Importantly, we think that compromise in the Starmer proposal, did not necessarily materialize out of nowhere, but again, they were over extensive debates that took place on two continents. And so, for example, if you take the original BC IPC request in Toronto for a claim service of indefinite duration, the negotiated compromise resulted in the Starmer proposal was a 30-day extension and a longer secondary claim service that is missing pertinent ownership data. So compromises such as this emerge from give-and-take negotiation among representatives of all stakeholder groups. So stakeholder groups now that are asserting that rights protection mechanisms should not have been revisited at all cast doubt on the good faith of the negotiations that took place in Brussels and Los Angeles. Also relative... Also relevant to the negotiated compromises, ICANN personnel have already given their views on which matters are public policy versus which are implementation. If the Council wants to respond on this point, then we should submit that the best way forward is to obtain a bright-line test from ICANN policy staff that everyone can abide by moving forward, rather than making attempts at potentially could be seen as self-serving definitions and context. And I think, you know, this is kind of a broader issue that we're all sort of struggling with, which is, you know, the concern that people feel like there isn't necessarily always a good faith determination of what's policy or what's implementation. And it seems like if you want something, then it's implementation. And if you don't want something to happen, then it looks like policy. So you send it off to a PDP. And again, you know, we just really want to reiterate, we feel like there was participation from the whole community in the meetings. There was a very long list of asks from the BC and the IPC that was whittled down to ultimately only the straw man proposal. Our understanding was that that was done in the context of removing things that were policy, and then that's why from the long list of things that the BC and the IPC brought to the table for discussions in LA and Brussels, this is all we walked away with, which is frankly a very small amount of what we were asking for originally, and this was supposed to represent the consensus of what was could be considered implementation.
Thanks, Brian. That's helpful input from your perspective and useful to hear. I see you've stimulated a couple of other members of the council to join, or council to join the queue. Let's give it over to Alan, and then I've got Wendy, Jeff, David, and Joy in line, but let's go and hear from Alan.
Okay, thank you. A couple of points. I and ALAC have real problems with how this was orchestrated, how the meetings were set up, and who was included, and, you know, funding and a whole bunch of other problems. That being said, I believe, and I think there's a consensus in ALAC, we haven't discussed it yet, but we haven't formally voted on it yet, but there has been a lot of discussion, believe that this kind of flexible and open brainstorming is going to be absolutely mandatory to how ICANN addresses policy problems and other problems. It was exactly that kind of discussion that made STI successful, and I'll remind everyone that STI was a group formed at the request of the board, or perhaps the threat of the board, on very short notice with limited participation, with a mandate to come up with some answers. And it was successful and is now being heralded as something that we can't change, but it was exactly this kind of brainstorming. The current PDP process tends to result on difficult problems with least common denominator answers, and those are simply not what ICANN's going to need in the future going forward to address its really difficult issues. And I think, you know, I would far prefer this kind of process to be initiated by the council and not by the CEO, but I think we need to be really open to figuring out how to address difficult problems, and the current working group model just isn't working in it. So I don't say that it should replace the policy development process or processes, but it should be a tool and a valuable tool in going forward in these kind of things. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Wendy.
Thanks. So speaking from the non-commercial stakeholders group, we support the letter that Mason has drafted and would support its being sent quickly and responsively from as many in council who can support it, because I think it's an important statement of the council's role in this process. It's nice for people to be able to go and have discussions, but the way those discussions are and the discussion group is assembled doesn't give it the same force as the community assembled in the GNSO Council. It may have had members speaking from various constituencies. NCSG did send people for part of the time and not as many as would have liked to be able to accommodate the schedule, but it's not a body that's constituted to make policy decisions. And so as much brainstorming as can go on there, when it is making policy choices, those belong in the GNSO Council. And I think we need to say that, and we need to be ready procedurally to address things quickly when asked, but not cede policymaking function. And I welcome the discussion that started on differentiating between policy and implementation.
Thanks, Wendy. I'm just going to make a couple of remarks there. I think there is, it's quite clear that the threading through this topic and through, in fact, in many ways, the GATT letter, there is the policy versus implementation question, and it's not formally on our agenda, although there has been some discussion on lists about this. So that sort of macro question, I'm acutely aware of it and a requirement to deal with it, and the overlap with this response to Thadi as well as the GAC letter that we have to deal with. Let me move to Jeff, and then I've got David, Joy, Zahid, and Mason.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, I mean, I a couple points. First is I just want to be clear that it was explicitly agreed with all the people that attended there, and I was one of them, that our being there and our agreement to allow Fadi to put this straw man out did not mean that we agreed with the straw man itself. And I'm not giving my personal viewpoint here. I'm just making a factual statement that our attendance there should not be taken as some sort of admission or some sort of consent to the straw man. In fact, the straw man was heavily objected to by a number of the people that were there, and in fact they expressed this very fear that someone would take their attendance as being agreement. And so on behalf of the NTAG and on behalf of the registries, I'm obligated to again make that statement and prefer not to we would prefer not to see that made in any kind of statement that comes out of any constituency or stakeholder group, because we think that's unfair and directly contrary to what we all had said and what Fadi had said to us at that meeting. The second thing is, I think this, like the GAC issue, is really, we really need to forget about the substance of the issue. We really need to, at some point, throw that aside, pretend it's another issue that we're not so passionate about, and then come down to the fundamental point. Are we or are we not the policymaking body of the ICANN community? And I don't mean body as in the council as the deciding legislature, but I mean the GNSO as a community. In fact, it says it in the bylaws that the GNSO is responsible for policy within for generic names. But to the extent that something is policy, we have no choice but to send a clear message to the board, to the GAC, and anyone else that we are that body. Unfortunately, we're getting very distracted with whether we are passionate about this issue or not. We make it about trademarks and we make it about all these other things, but the issue is simply, is this policy? If the answer is yes, then the GNSO should take it over and take it back. And I think that's what the letter should really emphasize more than anything else, is this is policy, therefore it's for the GNSO. And I would ask, and I know this is not going to happen, but I'll ask anyway, that we take the passion out of the, you know, do we support these additional trademark protections or not, and move it back to is this policy. I think that's critical. I think it's critical for our response to the GAC, because I see this as a defining moment. Is the GNSO going to constantly be an entity that's circumvented? But I also do want to state that I do support Fadi and the small meetings that he has. I think it's critical that ICANN have these smaller types of meetings so that their decisions are not made in a vacuum. Under the previous regime, ICANN staff made a lot of decisions on implementation that were in a vacuum without considering how this would affect registrants, registries, or registrars. I applaud Fadi's attempt to get some actual impact statements from all of the groups. I applaud his efforts in that. But and he's done his job. He's recognized that there are some policy issues, and I think those policy issues now need to be handled where it's supposed to under the bylaws, which is the GNSO. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Can I just encourage councillors who have spoken to put their hands down? And I've got David next in the queue, followed by Joy, Zahid, Mason.
Thank you. I just wanted to echo what Wendy said, that we, the NCSG, strongly supports the letter Mason drafted, and I also want to strongly agree with Jeff there that the you know, the GNS, we need to make it very clear, the GNSO is the policy body. I also don't think this idea that if something is labelled implementation details, the GNSO does not get involved is somehow to be pulled at, you know, it's some left the because it's basically policy decisions made later in the process somehow are no longer policy. I don't think that's, you know, I think there's a definitely, we need to make processes by which the GNSO community can advise on later in the process. And as I said, those small meetings and things may be that, but changing previously agreed on policy positions because it's implementation is not how we should go. And to say that there are, you know, and just wanted to note that the GNSO does have resolutions mandating review of RPMs in the after the delegation of new GTLDs. These aren't set in stone, but there will be opportunities to change. But the current process, you know, we've done a lot of work to make sure we've done a lot of work to ensure we have what we have. There's no, I don't agree that we should be changing, we should be using this sort of process this late. But I think Jeff's very right. We should step aside from how we feel about the personal issues and talk about the role of GNSO in policy and how we can, I mean, perhaps expand that role, but certainly keep the GNSO as the prime policy body. Thanks.
Sounds like to me that I won't try and sum up things at this point, but I'm picking up a couple of themes here. So thanks for that, David. I'm going to draw a line under John because even though we have set the expectation and will need to use the run over time, we still have a lot to get through, and this is a very useful and helpful discussion, but I think we will need to draw a line under John. So I've got, following David, Joy, Zahid, Mason, Volker, and John Berard. Joy, come in when you can. Off mute, please.
Sorry, my turn, Jonathan. It's Joy.
Yes, Joy, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, a few points. Firstly, I just wanted to echo the earlier comments. I don't believe we need to wait for the public comment period to end. Well, perhaps, you know, we've talked about the GNSO Council needing to be able to respond quickly and in a timely way to the new CEO, and I think we should proceed on a without prejudice basis to do so. I want to thank very much Mason for his leadership in drafting the letter that he's proposed, which is under support in NCSG. I do have a suggested couple of additions to the letter. One is firstly on the point regarding the additional expansion of trademark rights beyond law, which I think the letter makes the point well. We'd just like to note that this would not only impact the community, it also has implications beyond its impact outside the DNS and registering, because it could, of course, amount to an expansion of trademark rights through this private mechanism outside the traditional boundaries of current trademark laws and treaties. Secondly, just to remind the Council that we did pass a resolution mandating a review of all rights protection mechanisms from the UDRP to the new ones introduced in the new GTLD 18 months after the delegation of the first new GTLD. So, you know, expanding policy or changing the scope of agreed-upon rights protection mechanisms does make our previous decisions problematic. And, you know, in our view, if the IPC and the business constituency believe that these are necessary and urgent, then the solution isn't to propose them ad hoc, but to accelerate the existing council resolution on review. And we'd be happy to support that. Finally, I just on the policy and implementation questions, I want to thank Jeff for raising this. If I can say, a policy rose by any other name is still policy. And I think that the if we're to lift ourselves as a council above procedural questions, then we need to get into the substance, and being stuck in this implementation death spiral isn't helping. And so, you know, I think we very much need to support the letter to Whare now. And finally, I would just echo the points made about participation in these proposals, you know, suggesting that council writing to the CEO now is somehow a breach of good faith for those who, the small number of people who are able to participate in the unadvertised and meetings that were held, you know, I think is a real distortion of that process, and I think it's not really becoming of a councillor to raise that in this context. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Joy, for that comprehensive input. Zahid.
Hi, thank you. I'm sorry, just I'm trying to get my earphone on. I think, you know, I have concerns about the way that the letter draft has come out and what kind of discussions we're having. I wasn't at these meetings, but, you know, I completely agree with Alan that you need to have a process where negotiations of this nature can take place, which lead to certain resolutions. Now, not attending those meetings, negotiating down what one constituency wants, and then coming in and saying, look, we're going to fight it out again, I understand that that is a right, but what it does is creates a problem with good faith negotiations in the future, because then everyone will move to extreme positions, and that is going to be unworkable. This is my sense. The second problem I see here is that, you know, everybody's talking about how this is policy, and just to be clear, not everything that we're being asked to look at is policy. The straw man proposal and everything in it is not policy. They're implementation things. Lots of what, by the way, in the Meet Utility program, was, you know, never passed through the council. It was an implementation process. A simple example of a one RPM that never, ever, in any way, came to council was the implementation of the post-delegation dispute resolution process. Is that not policy? But it's in the new GTLD program. There are many others that have been implemented or passed through, and they're not policy. So, I mean, maybe we need to be factual, look at what the straw man actually does, let's have a discussion, substantive discussion, and impassionate about one at that, and try to figure out which of those items we've been asked to look at are policy and which are not. You know, at 50 UDRPs, automatic sunrise, timings being extended, these are not policy issues. These are issues related to implementation. Also, just to clarify, we keep hearing how council is a policy-making body. I think we put this to rest a long time ago, and I really would like to hear what others have to say about this. I think we all had agreed that this is what we are supposed to be. The council is not a policy-making body. It's a management body. It manages policy that is built, you know, it comes up from working groups and others. So here's maybe a couple of things we could do. We could, you know, separate the two aspects of strawmen and LPRs. The LPRs are a proposed implementation issue. Some say it might be policy, but we could separate that. And then there's the stuff that's in the straw man, which clearly is just implementation. So we have problems. You know, the genus of policy says that the new GTLD program should not infringe on legal rights of others. So we do have a problem we're trying to address, and we just can't ignore it by sending this letter. Also, with respect to the letter, I have some concerns in the process that's been adopted. You know, not a lot of people actually contributed to this letter. It wasn't an outcome of any sort of drafting team or anything of that nature. It's not really, I don't think it's been considered, because everybody keeps saying the straw man is policy, and I feel we do need to do justice to it. We do need to look at the letter, consider it properly, and maybe we need to have, you know, maybe a drafting team or somebody else to look at it properly. This rushing through a letter which doesn't represent facts, at least in my view, becomes a problem. So whatever comes out from this council going to FABI, I believe, needs to go through a process where we can genuinely say that we've all considered it, we've discussed it, but I don't think we can do this on this council call. Thank you.
Zahid, yes, I'm not expecting that we will do it on this council call. Thanks for your input. I think this council call represents an opportunity to get some comprehensive input in a way that's not possible on list, although it's not that the list isn't invaluable in and of itself. I've got Nathan, Volker, and John, and I'm going to have to try and wrap this up. Mason, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'll be brief. I certainly agree with Jeff about the council's authority over policy. I further agree with Alan that flexibility in the development of output for the GNSO is warranted. It's appropriate. It's going to need to be a tool that we employ further and often. All that said, speaking for the registrars, we were at the meeting at the request of the CEO. We were not at the meeting in a negotiation session. It was simply to provide input on what had been proposed by the BC and the IPC. I fundamentally disagree with the idea that that was a negotiated session. If I flip the situation on its head, if someone were to approach FADI and say, we'd like to negotiate the removal of some of these established RPMs in new TLDs, you know, would that be considered a good faith move, or would it be, would that be characterized as policy or implementation? I think we need to be very careful about skirting around the established procedures, because it removes predictability. And as I pointed out on the list before, I think, you know, some may think that that's a trivial issue. I assure you that from a contracted party point of view, it's not. I do think that many of these were settled issues, and they should remain such, and we should respectfully treat new proposals as they are. I agree with Jeff that we need to maintain the authority of the council over policy development. With regard to the letter itself, I certainly don't intend to rush it through. I took a stab at it in good faith that reflected what I had learned was most of the council's position. I'm certain the IPC and the BC are not in agreement with what's written there. That's why I worded it the way that I did. Minority statement had, you know, reflection of BC IPC position. Of course, you know, that's I wrote that letter with the full expectation that the GNSO's full position would need to be considered, and if there's a strong enough bifurcation in the council about feelings on the matter, then it should be so reflected in the communication to FADI. So I certainly have no intention of running one position over the other and silencing anyone else's point of view.
Volker?
Yes, I just wanted to say I agree with most of the content of the letter. I do think that establishing parallel processes for policymaking when we already have processes, because some parties think they are not conducive to their intentions or goals, is not the right way to go, because in the end that will only turn out to lead to lobbying with the board or FADI for whatever the position of one stakeholder group may be, to the detriment of all the other stakeholder groups. I cannot agree to that. That would be a death knell to the GNSO process and to the council itself. So I cannot, in my best conscience, support the process for that. The second point is that the implementation versus policy issue, that is something that will, I think, that should occupy us for a long time for the future, because I was positively appalled by some of the comments from staff that certain aspects of the strawman proposals were implementation rather than policy, when exactly the same topics had been discussed in the policy-making process as policy with a different result. And then coming forward to say this is implementation instead of policy when it was policy before does not make sense, is not good process, is not good implementation, is just not the way that we should accept these proposals.
John, before I try and sum this up or bring it to some sort of conclusion, you've got the penultimate word.
Thank you, Jonathan. I realize that what we are doing here is we have a number of threads that are wrapping around themselves. I just hope it doesn't lead to a rope by which we hang. The distinction between policy and implementation, the conversations, the sessions of the sort that were held in Brussels and L.A. were anything more or less than public comment in person, the ability of staff and the CEO to make real the wishes of the DNSO. I look at the initial implementation of digital archery and then the prioritization draw, and I think if that's implementation, then clearly if the policy is to offer some protections of trademarks, then creating a sunrise of any duration, allowing for the protection of marks in a number of ways, seems to be a matter of implementation. And so I would encourage us to look at each of these strands separately, but appreciating that they do ultimately wrap together. I think that the BC's position is clear. Coming out of Toronto, the BC had signed on board with the IPC promoting a list of eight requests. If you look at the straw man as it exists, there are three of those eight that have survived, with the fourth being the limited preventive registrations, and we can discuss whether that's policy or not. I believe it is. I think it'd be great to be able to look at these threads separately with an appreciation that they ultimately will wrap together.
Thanks, John, and I appreciate your drive to try and bring whilst not necessarily a consensus of opinions or views, a consensus of thinking or operating. I mean, I think this has been a valuable discussion. There always was a risk in opening this up that we wouldn't conclude anything. My sense of where things are headed is there is some conflict between a desire to respond in a quick and timely fashion versus a recognition that we do have some time, and in fact FADI has given us some time. I think those two can be reconciled. What I'm thinking of now, and I'll leave you with this thought, is that we may want to put a rather shorter reply to FADI, focusing on the Council's role and our understanding of the Council's role, our intention to work as part of a broader initiative to tackle this issue of policy versus implementation, and an intention to respond to some or all of the specifics of the straw man in the time frame which he has permitted and which will permit the public comment process to proceed. So I think I can see a way forward that accommodates much of what has been said, and what I'm starting to think of is, as I say, a shorter form of letter that goes out initially emphasizing the Council's role and our views and our work on policy versus implementation, and then a slightly slower response on some of the substance of the straw man along the lines that has already been drafted, but clearly with reviewing and work to be done. So, I think we'll have to pick this up on list. We do have some time, although I have heard that others would like to respond rather more rapidly, and I think we can reconcile those, and let's pick this up. But thank you for the very constructive tone and, substantial input that's been put into the discussion so far. I think that was as much as we could expect, and it's very encouraging to see. So thank you very much for that. The next topic is possibly equally challenging, although we don't have the benefit here of some subsequent guidance. We simply have the GAC letter, which in my view came not as a total surprise, but because it did follow on from a comment from the high level meeting, but it nevertheless was a strongly worded challenge to the Council as to our role in a particular area, and it certainly needs this needs a response. I think it represents both, if you like, in a little bit of a cliche, both a threat and an opportunity. It's the GAP clearly laying down a line which they want us to respond to. I think it's, I hope that it creates the opportunity for some for us to engage with the GAC other than simply writing a response and, in a sense, throwing it back over the fence and saying, well, here's our response. I think it's Jeff's made some constructive work with his colleagues on a response. And, Jeff, I wonder if you might like to say a few words on that and the kind of really less about the substance of your response, although I'm sure you'll tackle that, but as much about the thinking behind that, and then I think we could have a little bit of discussion on this as well. But like I say, I think that there's some diplomacy to be done to be with the GAC to be handled in this as well. So let's hear, Jeff, from you on some of your rationale for how where you went down, which route you went down with on this, and hear if there's any other input, and then take it from there. Thanks.
Sure, Jonathan. We must have written a number of drafts of this internally at Newstar, and just trying to figure out how we could. And I want to thank Becky Burr, who's many of you know, and was very instrumental in drafting this letter. What we tried to do is tried to come up with a tone that wouldn't be adversarial or be taken as adversarial to the GAC, but just trying to explain the GNSO's role and why we think this does some of these things involve policy issues. Even if, at one point in the letter, even if the GAC is right and all of these are legal determinations, and even if they're completely right that it's the law should govern it and really not relying on the GNSO to interpret the law, there are still policy issues around the edges or that would need to be considered. So it's basically to say and to justify why we started the PDP. So in the first paragraph, we went back and tried to come up with a definition of policy or policy development, and really what we did is we went back, God, this must have been, I think, seven or eight or nine years ago when there was a dispute about the waitlist service and whether that was a proper topic for the DNSO at the time and whether that was properly for policy discussion. And at the time, the registry that had proposed it said this is not appropriate to be discussed within the policy realm. And so we sought an opinion from the general counsel at the time, who was the previous general counsel, and he came out with this kind of factors that he believed were issues of, if you applied these four factors, then, it was policy. And so we went through those factors and put them in this letter as kind of just an explanation of what we thought might be a good test to continue. And I think at one point it was actually reflected in the bylaws, but then taken out in a subsequent amendment. So the rest of the letter basically says that while we don't dispute the validity of their advice, we're not trying to tread on their turf. We're basically saying that policy development is even needed, or is needed to discuss things like exceptions. So even if you accept the fact that the treaties of the world require registries and registrars to protect the Olympic marks or the Red Cross marks in accordance with the treaties, even those treaties and national laws recognize that there are exceptions. So there should be a policy discussion on those exceptions at a minimum. And that's, again, I didn't want to make the point that we necessarily agree with that outcome, but just playing kind of the devil's advocate of even if we accepted all of that to be true, there are still policy issues that would need to be discussed. The same thing with the, applying the .int criteria to the for the IGOs, even that recognizes that there are exceptions to IGOs, so we need to deal with those exceptions, and that would be only through a policy process. So you know, it's really trying to be more of a non-adversarial response, but still yet firm in the in communicating the message that the GNSO is responsible for policy and trying to encourage dialogue. So that's really kind of the thinking of the response.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for that, for all of your work in the background and for that comprehensive review of it for our benefit now. I mean, it is my opinion that almost no matter how effectively, and I do think your first draft is a tremendous first draft and first effort, and it gets us a long way. I wonder whether we, without some form of oral dialogue, you know, some sort of informal or other communication with the GAC, my sense is that we might be doomed to failure. So that's the challenge that I feel I have in my hands. That's the hot potato that I would like to deal with. I'd like to reach out and try and do something more than just sending a letter back. So I, like many of you, I'm very supportive of the draft and feel very positive about it, but I would like to manage the subtleties of the relationship. And actually, in some ways, there's an appeal to you as counselors. If anyone has established relationships with GAC members to make them aware that the seriousness with which we take the GAC's input, the respect with which we hold them, and our desire to do the right thing in this respect, I think would do no harm. But I think it's incumbent on perhaps council leadership to try and reach out to the GAC and talk to them a little prior to sending a letter back. So that's my thinking on both the tactics and the substance. Jeff, I think your hand has come up again.
Yeah, I mean, I understand your point about talking to them, but I think we really owe them a response in writing fairly quickly. That letter that they drafted didn't take them very long after the Toronto meeting to come back with it, and we seem to be taking a much longer time to respond. And I think if the governments of the world can agree on a response, you know, we should be able to agree on something to send back. And you know, I would encourage, you know, I understand that there's people that don't necessarily agree with, there's a legal statement in there about the liability of intermediary liability. I understand if you don't agree with that, that's fine, because I've seen that from people. But come up with a way to restate that, recognizing that there may be an issue that some people feel needs to be explored. You know, but I do think we should set a time frame to respond by, you know, no later than, I mean, if we respond later than January 15th, or I think it's just pretty poor. I think we need to show that we are a body that can act, at least with some things. And if we can't respond by mid-January to a request we got in, I don't remember the date, in November, that's pretty bad. So I strongly encourage people to make constructive comments, suggest edits, recognizing that there's two sides of every story. So if we can make sure that that's in there, then that would be great.
Jeff, I hear you, and that's a very good point. I mean, we do owe a timely response, and frankly, it came on November 28th, which was after our last council meeting, so it's reasonable that we should have a meeting in between times to discuss our response. We are, of course, doing that now. I would like people, I see Thomas has put a plus one in the comment. I would like, recognizing what I've said about the fact that it may be in our interest to discuss elements of our response. I would like very much, as we're seeing in the chat now, and on list comments about the speed with which we reply, bearing in mind there is some risk with replying at speed that our written response isn't properly contextualized. They may not be irreconcilable. It may be possible to talk with the GAC before sending a written response, but that would be useful to focus on that, because it seems to be a relatively good support in and around the content of what was clearly a well thought out letter in the first place. There will be some tweaks. Personally, I have a couple of tweaks, but and I'm sure others do, so we can tidy up the draft. The question is the mechanics of when we get it. Is the 31st of December our deadline? Is mid-January our deadline? Is it prior to our next meeting? And I think we should focus on that and whether or not it's necessary to have a conversation with the GAC leadership and or the members of the GAC who are substantially responsible for this letter. So if we could direct comments in that respect, but I think I've got a pretty good feel there's a sense of getting this letter off in a timely fashion, and we should prioritize that. If we are able to discuss the contents before sending it, great. So it sounds to me like our end stop date is our next council meeting, which happens to be the 17th of January, which makes the end stop deadline for this around mid-January, which is what Jeff said. So let's work with that in mind, that we may do it sooner, but realistically with the holiday period now, we've had our meeting. Our meeting runs up pretty close to the holiday period, depending on where you are and what circumstances you're in. So it sounds to me like our working deadline, the end stop deadline, is mid-January. So we'll take that as a takeaway, and the letter to be sent off prior to our next council face-to-face meeting. Unless there are any other important remarks to be made, I know there's some comments going on in the chat, but I think we'll then keep things moving on to the next topic. So thanks again to Jeff and the people at Newstar and the councillors who've contributed both on the chat and on the audio.
Jonathan, this is Jeff. Alan had a good comment on the chat. I think you should, if you can, communicate with the GAC or Heather and just let her know that to expect a response by mid-January, just so that they don't think we've forgotten them or ignoring them.
Yeah, good. That's a very good point, Alan. Thank you, and thanks, Jeff, for highlighting that. I mean, I think actually it strikes me that's a relevant response in both cases of both of this item and the letter to Fadi, which is in essence what I was saying about the letter to Fadi. It may be slightly more complicated what we're trying to get across to Fadi in the case of a timely response. But I agree with you. I think, you know, we've had our meeting, we've discussed both of these items, and at the very least, the form of holding response would be useful. So I'm happy to take that on board as an action and ask Glenn to record that as an action on me to at least send a letter to Heather indicating the progress we're making and possibly to Fadi as well. So we'll do that. All right, I'll consider that item now closed and move on to the next item, which is item 9 on our agenda. And this should be a brief update on where we're heading with ATRT2 before we move on to the item 10, which Jean-François has very patiently borne with us to get to. So let's go to ATRT2.
Yes, and that's me, I understand, to Jonathan Wolf speaker. Thank you very much. Just briefly, as you have seen, there was an extension of the deadline for applications for membership in the ATRT2, and that gives us and the community some more time to think about and to decide for the nominees from the GNSO. To the ATRT2, we should have a look to that deadline. And the application is now, deadline is 14th of January, and the 14 days, 2 weeks after that, on 28th of January, the selectors, meaning Steve Cocker and Heather Dryden, are expecting the nomination of the declaration of the nominations from the various supporting organizations. So the GNSO has then 2 weeks to decide on that. Now, looking how to deal with that, since according to the GNSO process, the council has at the end to look over what the various stakeholder groups are putting forward in names and whether it fits to the to our process and the rules we have set out for that. So we have only the council meeting on 17th of January. This is 3 days after the application deadline, and even almost 2 weeks before we have to forward that. So we have to consider that and have to think about whether our stakeholder groups could forward to the council in during that time or until which time the candidates could be put forward to the council, and then may have to think about a special call. Some of the council just dealing with this matter, a short call. Some of you may recall who have been already council members at the time when the first ATRT has been created, that we did the same at that time. Just another point so far, I have seen from the application list that we have so far four applicants from the GNSO. If that stays as it is at the time being, then the decision may be easy because we may get four slots to put forward candidates to, and that would be facilitate our process. So far to the situation, I've seen on the list in between sometimes questions from some members or some people, which may seems to be that they are not very familiar with the process of the GNSO. If that is the case, please refer to me, and I'm thinking about to send out to the SG leaders also another letter referring to that process, so that within the constituencies and the stakeholder groups, all people could be made familiar with that. So far, that is the situation that we have. The question is for me that the timeline. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Wolf. So the outcomes of that, I think, are threefold. Then one is, as far as I understand it, that there is an opportunity to send a letter out to the stakeholder group leadership indicating and reminding of the GNSO process. Is it still in your mind to send a letter to Heather and Steve to request the four GNSO slots? I believe it is. And also to highlight the timing issue for endorsement.
Yes, definitely the first one, to the SGs, reminding them about this process. That I think that is necessary. The second one to Steve and Heather was intended only to cover what I would say the GNSO interests. That means in getting at least four slots on the ATRT, because if you read the application, the publication of the application and the call for applications, that is a little bit nebulous. So it's not definitely saying telling something about the numbers of members of the ATRT too. It's just saying that Heather and Steve will be the one who decide how many and who is going to get a member. So what I would suggest is, sending them a letter referring to what happened in the past, and that the GNSO relies on that and is requesting and asking for the same treatment as like last time in getting four slots.
Yeah, and highlighting any timing issues as well.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, thank you very much. I think that sounds good. And we need to get cracking on that so that those letters go out either before the end of the year or very early in the new year, but I think preferably before the end of this year. I'm conscious we've had Jean-Francois and members of staff, and in fact all of you councillors, very patiently holding on. We've had some substantial topics to cover, but I need to keep it moving now. If we are to complete by no later than the top of the hour, we've got around 10 minutes each for the next two items, and then a five-minute wrap-up on any other business. So let's move on to item 10, which is on the Who is Board resolution and the next steps, and I think we're going to expect some input from Margie and Jean-Francois on this.
Hi, Jonathan. Yes, it's Margie. Actually, we also have Denise Michelle, who will give you the update on the board resolution and introduce Jean-Francois Barriel to you. So I'm going to hand it off to Denise.
Hi, Denise. Thanks for your patience, and thanks, Jean-Francois. I will say nothing more but to let you have the floor.
Denise? I think you're on mute, Denise.
I am. I was very eloquent, though. The last month, the board approved a resolution as part of their action on the affirmation of commitment to its policy review team report. That resolution essentially takes a two-track approach to addressing what we refer to as who is. The first track is that it directs the CEO to continue to fully enforce the contractual conditions that relate to the current, you know, collection access and accuracy of the GTLD registration data, and also to increase efforts to both communicate and conduct outreach, ensuring that compliance with existing WHO policy and conditions is robustly followed. That was the first track, and the second track to this approach is that the board tasked the CEO to really go beyond the existing WHO protocol and policy and start a new initiative that's focused more broadly on directory services. And this specifically, the CEO is creating an expert working group to define the purpose of, sort of answer the fundamental questions, define the purpose of collecting and maintaining GTLD registration data, consider how to safeguard that data, and ideally provide a proposed model for managing GTLD directory services that address, you know, the full gamut of the issues that the GNSO has been struggling with for the last decade or so, including data accuracy, access issues, and, of course, taking into account the safeguards for protecting data. This expert working group is the output of this will be provided to the board and is intended to be the basis, sort of a starting point for GNSO policy development process, a board initiated GNSO PDP. It's important to keep in mind that this the output of this group and the purpose of this group is really to hopefully provide a productive starting point for a bottom-up multi-stakeholder policy development process. It is in no way a substitute for any of that, but rather is intended to help augment it. Fadi tapped a distinguished executive to serve as a neutral lead facilitator for this expert working group that is being formed. On ICANN's homepage, we have announcements providing more information on Jean-Francois's background and inviting any interested parties to indicate their interest by sending their CV or resume. We expect the group to be convened in January and have, at a minimum, an update for the community to discuss at the Beijing meeting. I'll turn it over to Jean-Francois Barriel now. Jean-Francois is, as I indicated, a very experienced executive with a long and distinguished career in the telecommunications and high-tech industry, and also has extensive experience in creating international standards previously through an organization called RosettaNet. Jean-Francois is based in Geneva and I think on airlines around the world. He does quite a bit of traveling. So I'll turn this over to Jean-Francois to talk to you some more about the expert working group, and after he's done, we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Denise. I hope everyone can understand me behind my very strong Scottish accent. But first of all, thank you, I would say, very much for this opportunity to introduce myself, but pretty much in the context of this project, which is quite exciting. I'm sure I met most of you on the line, but I'm not probably yet capable to put a face behind a name. But I'm sure in the next weeks I will be able to do so. So it's also for me a big honor that has been given to me by Fadi and then Steve Crocker to nominate me to facilitate this project, and hopefully I will say that I will be able to get your confidence as well, and hopefully as soon as possible, facilitating this, as I said, great initiative. But at the same time, I measure the very, very large, challenging task that has been given to me to facilitate this this task force or this expert working group. So I'm not totally naive, and I got a lot of feedback from many people that it's basically quasi impossible, but that's also an extra motivation for me, because when it is said to be impossible, that's maybe some possibility to demonstrate that with a lot of passion and trust, which is my motto, by the way, is we are able to do something great for the community, for the internet, and for the world. That's how I see this one. I know this is to put like a circle into a square or whatever, but as Denis was mentioning during my time as an executive in the IT industry, high-tech industry and telecom industry, then I've been exposed to many of these elements which were said to be impossible. And also, when I started to work with Fadi, in fact, 10 or 12 years ago, creating RosettaNet, I think it was probably more simple, because it was one dimension versus this multi dimension, multi-stakeholders that we are representing. But I think at the beginning it was also not so obvious. So I will definitely, we are right now in the process with Denis and a few people from ICANN, including Fadi and Steve, to recruit some volunteers to help us in this quite impressive task that is in front of us. So it's basically a mix of expertise that we are looking for, but also not totally all expertise. So we want some expertise to make sure that we capture all the knowledge in different domain of data collection, access, accuracy, whatever, privacy, but also very much capable to understand the diversity of view of the community, also understanding that there is no probably perfect solution, but really working together, understanding the fundamental of what we want to do for the benefit of the community, for the benefit, as I said, of internet, and for the benefit of the world, most likely we are able to move people in the right direction. So as it is mentioned on the slide that you have on your screen, ideal candidates will be, as I said many times in my career, it's a mix of good brain, good heart, good hands, and good guts, which means also that to superpose to these hard skills or expertise, we need a lot of soft skills to make the impossible possible. So to be very open to new ideas, willing to forge consensus, and not to camp into a situation that we have been for quite long. So thinking out of the box, thinking strategically, not be afraid of solving and managing conflicts, and truly avoiding statu quo, and really have it in mind that we have to deliver results. So, as we said, I think the first proposal, or the straw man, or whatever we can call it, is to be reviewed by the community when we are in Beijing. so in April. So that's a very short period of time if we think about all the different aspects that is behind the difficulty of what we are trying to do with this new directory, basically, for Internet. I think it's probably larger, as Denise was also saying. It's definitely larger than just the WHOIS. WHOIS is one part of it, but probably much more. So we are truly looking for people capable to create this this new model for directory services. And as I said, we start basically almost at the end of this year when we have probably created the team. The first face-to-face meeting hopefully will be mid of January. And I'm sure we'll need another one before we, in March, most likely, before we get together to present our proposal in Beijing in April. So that's basically what I wanted to say today. I think this is so important that we are very pleased that Steve Crocker and Chris Dispen have accepted to be really part of this working group, basically in the function to liaise with this between the board and the expert group. So we have received already a lot of volunteers, so which is quite nice to start with. And I think the task now will be to have a right variety of people representing different geographies, different skills, different expertise, and different capability to bring the people together. So hopefully a team between 10 to 15 will be a team which will be, our group will be, I believe, manageable to bring some conclusion. So that's basically what we have in mind at the moment, and we are actively running with a very strong support from Denise and Margie.
Thank you very much, Jean-Francois. Thank you for being patient with us during the course of our call. Thank you for your input on what is going to be indeed a very likely a challenging issue to manage and navigate. I would like to offer councillors the opportunity to give input and question on this. I would like to also highlight to councillors that we have, or I have chosen to, with Rob's kind agreement, to reschedule again item 11 to our next meeting, and I've promised Rob it will be high on the agenda rather than at the end of the agenda and vulnerable to being bumped again next time. So we have a few minutes to, and I know some of you are having to drop off, but thank you, Rob, and thank you, Jean-Francois. So please, the floor is open to Brian Winterfeld, first of all, and any others for comment or questions on this. And thanks to those of you who do have to drop off now for your patience in bearing with us on this extra long meeting. Right, Brian.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. I want to thank Margie and Jean-Francois for these presentations. They're very helpful. I agree that they have a daunting task ahead of them that are very important, and we appreciate them outlining where they're at. I want to just, on behalf of the IPC, stress the importance from our perspective of including those who use WHOIS data to help protect intellectual property rights in the work that's being done moving forward. Also, I think some additional timeline information that was just shared by Jean-Francois was very helpful, and I just want to encourage access to and distribution of any presentation materials provided by ICON staff regarding next steps or timetables, since these were not really clearly spelled out in the board's resolution or accompanying materials. So we look forward to having what was presented today distributed, and would love to see more timelines and information shared as it gets fleshed out.
Absolutely, and we have to decide very quickly on the best and appropriate communication vehicle that we put in place for everyone to understand what we are doing and the direction that we have taken.
Right, thank you. I've got Joy next, followed by Ching.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thank you also for your presentation on this important issue. Just a follow-up, really, is to
emphasize that we're also, in the non-commercial stakeholder group, really pleased to see this extra work and would want to encourage a focus on registrants' rights and, in particular, the specific human rights issues that arise in relation to WHOA's data around freedom of association, particularly for human rights defenders, and free expression. These are issues which are referring to are not new issues, and they've been raised on numerous occasions before. But I guess I really just wanted to emphasise that frequently in the discussion and discourse around rights in relation to WHOAs, we focus on or assume that we're talking about rights protection mechanisms for intellectual property rights. And, of course, there are a much wider range of rights which registrants have and which apply and which need to be taken into account in decision-making and policy. And we'll be looking forward to bringing those issues forward and looking for volunteers who will be able to participate and bring those issues forward into this work. Thank you.
Absolutely. In fact, the good news is we don't start from scratch. In fact, we start from a lot of materials which have been developed over the past time, in particular this Security and Stability Advisory Committee and this ESAC 055, which has been mentioned also in the announcement, but also many community who have expressed different views. So the task will be to bring the lower common denominator in view for starting from a platform on this one and then build up for much more aggressive and great ambition that we have on this one.
Right. I'm given that we are. Thank you, Jean-François. Given that we are losing, I must make Ching's question and comment the final one because we do need to wrap up the meeting now before it runs too much into the overtime. So, Ching, if you could make your comment or question, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, John, Sean Swath, and Dennis, and Margie. And I would just like to raise the flag here and. I have brought this up in the beginning of this meeting, and Margie and I, we have briefly spoke about this, who is work. Some part of it is actually overlapping with the current ongoing IRD, the Internationalization Registration Data, the issues report for it. So I would encourage that the staff really to allocate the resource to just to avoid the redundancy of the work and potentially to try to prioritize the IDM part of this, as we have learned that the IDM application has been given a priority in this round. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ching. I'm very conscious of the time. We've lost a few councillors already, so I think I'm going to have to wrap that one up. We have all thanked Jean-François and Denise for their presentation. It looks like a challenging piece of work and something that's going to keep you guys very busy over the period running up to Beijing, no doubt. Thank you to all of the councillors who have contributed to this meeting and the kind of spirit. I know there's been plenty of things to disagree about, but the tone and spirit has been good, so I very much appreciate you responding to the call for that or doing it of your own volition. We'll take any other business. Was the final item under item 12 was approving John Berard as liaison to the CCNSO. We're given that a couple, if not more, councillors have dropped off. I will refer that to the list and we'll approve it on list. So I think I will give it a last opportunity for anyone else to raise anything under any other business before we aim to bring this meeting to a close. Seeing no hands in the chat and hearing nothing on the audio, I will suggest that we close this meeting, and it remains to me to wish everyone all the best over the holiday season coming up. And thank you all again for your participation in the extended meeting and in the spirit in which you have participated. Goodbye, and talk to you in January, everyone, if not on list in between. Thanks again.
Hello.
Great.
Thank you, Jonathan, and everyone, goodbye.